It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. Thank you so much for joining us. Each of you are treasured, you're valued, you have purpose today. Strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. You were made for this moment. Live with intention. And get to work with this great team. That's producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, and all the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. These broadcasts that we have put together for you for Thanksgiving week are so special. And today's no exception. We'll be talking with Dr. Douglas Grotius, and he is one of the foremost Christian apologists in the nation. Before we get to all of that, though, and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for a weekly newsletter there, and you can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. And thank you to all of you who support us. And I get to work with great sponsors. I highly recommend each and every one of them. If you go to my website, KimMunson.com, click on the sponsors tab, and I would highly recommend give your business to each of these vendors, because they really do support what we're doing. We are an independent voice. One of those vendors or restaurants is Hooters Restaurants. They have five locations, and that is Loveland, Westminster, Aurora, Lone Tree, and Colorado Springs. And as we're in this season of getting together with people, it's always great to be able to save a little bit of money. And Monday through Fridays, they have lunch specials, they have happy hour specials, and burger specials, $10 for a whole variety of different burgers. So be sure and check that out as well. Producer Steve, I so appreciate this team that we get to work with, and Dr. Douglas Grotius, you have a great story about him.
Well, it centers on how we got to know him in the first place. It goes all the way back to started in 2002. The senior pastor of Riverside Baptist Church was on his way to a family reunion in Missouri, but unfortunately, there was a car crash in Hays, Kansas, and he lost his life. So it took us quite a while to find a new senior pastor. But in the interim period, Dr. Douglas Grotius came a couple times to preach a couple different sermon series. But the one that grabbed me the most was his series on truth, because just a few years earlier, postmodernism was really kicking in the door, and the church, any evangelical church, was probably very mindful of that. And the main problem was it was this idea behind multiple truths. And the question was, whose truth, your truth or mine?
Right.
And Dr. Douglas Grotius just kicked in the door and set things straight.
Well, and I remember this. Remember when people used to say, I'm going to go find my truth? And I remember I said that to my dad one time, and he's like, what?
Well, okay, that's a rite of passage.
I guess so. But in this, where we are right now, truth, finding truth, and I know that we'll talk with Dr. Douglas Grotius about this, but I thought we'd go to the Bible. This is biblical. John 8:32. It says, then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. I go to this whole COVID-19 Wuhan, China virus, and we continue to search for truth within the data, within the information about this, and we continue to search for truth in this. I think we will get to it, but there's been a lot of, I think, obfuscation of truth or manipulating of truth, but we continue. It says, then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. So we need to search for that absolute truth.
You know, that's brilliant on your part. That is an excellent illustration of what the whole biblical injunction says. You know, you will seek truth, you will find it will set you free. And because there's such a it's beyond a parade. It's a deluge of misinformation and or half-truths. And, you know, I'll go out on a limb. I say, you know, the Denver broadcast media, television wise, is just not doing anybody a favor with all their half truths and, you know, lack of really investigative reporting.
Well, and speaking of truth, we can all make mistakes. That does happen on our show. If we make a mistake, we will want to clarify it. It's not easy sometimes to say that you've made a mistake, but that does happen. But you just mentioned the word half-truths. And so is it a half-truth? Is it a half-lie? I mean, think about that. Is it? I guess so.
Well, is the glass half full or half empty? I think that it's both, because especially if it's done on purpose, is saying, I'm going to tell you enough of the truth to make you go off in a certain direction that you probably would not go in if you knew the rest of the story, Paul Harvey. So, yeah, it's just as good as a lie.
Okay. So manipulated truth or a half-truth, I'll go out on a limb and say it's a big lie. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm not. There's no debate here. Sorry.
Okay. So we have to ask, as we are reflecting in the last 18 months or so, 20 months, from where we went from 2 weeks to flatten the curve to get the jab or lose your job, and don't even take into account the fact that people that have had COVID have antibodies. Why would you need to get a jab? And of course, they're saying the jab is not as efficient as it used to be. So there seems to be some mistruth around this whole thing, which I say, Steve, I mean, this is very powerful. John 8:32, then you will know the truth and the truth will set you free. And as we're looking at this tyranny and this oppression that's being used on the American public, that's why we do the show, is to search for truth to help you be free.
Well, I'm looking at the notes for the show that we're going to do with Patty later this week. And the way she opens up is, as we approach week 88 in the world of 2 weeks to flatten the curve, and all I'm going to say is that, okay, we all know what a dam, the structure known as a dam, does. It holds back, you know, water. There is a dam that right now is out there, and there's a lot of things building up behind it, and they're all the
truth,
the hideous things that are happening with this vaccine. But yet, you know, major media, everyone's linking arms and they're doing their best to hold this thing back. If this dam breaks somewhere down the line, oh my gosh, I can't imagine what it's going to be like, not just in this country, but around the world.
Well, and to that, the truth shall set you free. And America was founded on this idea of freedom, of liberty. And as our friend Ben Martin said, liberty is the responsible exercise of freedom. And there is a responsibility to each and every one of us and to our press to be searching for truth, to reporting the truth. And certainly we have opinions, but it's important to, I think, search for that absolute truth in each of these particular questions that we have there. So I promise that this is going to be a really terrific show as we talk with Dr. Douglas Groteis about a variety of different issues out there. And so we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll start the conversation with Dr. Douglas Groteis.
Home ownership and private property rights help you build wealth for you and your family. RE/MAX Alliance award-winning realtor Karen Levine understands this. Supply is super tight right now. This is why you need a seasoned professional with excellent negotiating skills on your side of the table, whether buying or selling an existing home or buying a new build. As a member of the National Association of Realtors Board of Directors, Karen Levine volunteers hours of her time to help you build your American dream. Call her today at 303-877-7516. Again, that's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there, and you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Thank you to all of you who support us. We are an independent voice, and we search for truth and clarity by looking at these issues through this lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. During this Thanksgiving week, we have planned some really amazing shows for you, and I'm so thrilled to have our next guest, Dr. Douglas Groteis. precise, he's a member of the Evangelical Theological Society, the Evangelical Philosophical Society, and Society of Christian Philosophers. Dr. Grotius received a PhD and BS from the University of Oregon and a master's in philosophy from the University of Wisconsin in Madison. And he does a lot of work in apologetics, in Christian apologetics, which that means in defense of the Christian faith. Dr. Grotius, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here again.
Well, first thing I'd like to talk with you about, I was looking at all the different books that you have written, but one of the titles that really got me was Christianity That Counts. So let's talk about that, particularly in this 2021 world that we live in, Dr. Grotius. Where should we start?
Well, I think the best place to start is the whole idea of truth, because I hear so many people now talking about my truth and his truth and the truth of there's racial truth and there's gender truth. And I think we need to take seriously everyone's experiences. We need to honor people's walk through life. People are made in the image and likeness of God, the Bible tells us, and Christ died for the sins of the whole world. But we don't get to create truth. We can recognize it, we can seek it, we can savor it, we can apply it. But people so often say, well, that's my truth. I heard Don Lemon say that on television sometime recently. I don't watch him too much, but he said, well, that's my truth. And I was reading an article in the New Yorker, and it was talking about the critical legal theory writer, Derek Bell, and it ended with, well, Derek Bell told his truth. And I want to say, wait a minute, we need to know what is true, and truth is what corresponds to reality, or you might say that facts make beliefs true, or the lack of a fact makes a belief false. So there's a lot of emphasis now with this whole debate over critical race theory and so on about truth and lived experience. And the idea is, well, if a group has historically been oppressed, then they're probably still oppressed. And if they feel oppressed through the reports of their lived experience, then we just have to take that to be true. And I say, well, there's an experience of something or another. But it's always possible that someone has interpreted their experience wrongly. So in my career as a philosopher over many years and as an apologist, I've tried to emphasize defending this objective view of truth or the correspondence view of truth against what's called relativism, where truth is simply how you experience it or how you define it. And that's very dangerous because we really need to be humble before reality, and we need to let reality correct us where we are wrong. And if we simply make truth a matter of personal experience or of some kind of collective feeling of a gender or race or whatever it is, we lose touch with reality, and then all that's left is manipulating images and sound bites and talking points. It takes some tenacity to try to get to the truth of matters. And as a follower of Christ, I believe the ultimate, the most important truth is the gospel, that God has sent his only Son into the world to redeem us, to forgive our sins through his death on the cross and his resurrection. So Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. And he backed it up by his righteous life, his loving death, his resurrection from the dead. So I think that is the ultimate truth, and I've defended that and tried to explain that over many, many years. But the very concept of truth is being attacked subtly often. You don't hear people say, I'm going to attack the objective view of truth, but you hear them talk about my truth, or you hear them talk about how lived experience is the ultimate test for truth. And that really concerns me as a philosopher and as a Christian.
Well, on our show, we talk about searching for truth and clarity as we look at these issues. And we are looking for that foundational truth. And as you were talking on this whole relativism and how people feel, I was thinking about people could agree that 2 + 2 = 5. They can say that that is their truth, but it's not true. And I know that's a very simple example, but it somehow that speaks to me as I'm trying to work through this relativism and truth.
Well, it's actually a very good example. And what is amazing to me is that some folks are saying that the idea of objective truth and of basic logic is a white racist idea. It's hard to believe people say this, but I've seen it in several different places. I even heard someone on National Public Radio say that the idea of objective truth is a white supremacist idea. And I thought, my goodness, well, that claim right there is a claim to objective truth. You're saying the concept of objective truth is, that is, objectively is, a white supremacist idea. And we've kind of lost our minds on this if we believe something like that, because to assert anything about reality, we have to make some kind of objective truth claim. So if someone says the United States is a white supremacist system, that's a universal, objective, absolute claim, and then it needs some support. And you need to have a dialogue back and forth about, well, what about it is racist? Where have we made progress on matters of race? And so on. But when we're talking about the realm of moral values, yes, people have different opinions about it, but that doesn't mean that these moral values are relative to and contingent upon any one person's view or a group's view. It's a question of factuality. So that example of mathematics is really a good one, because people want to say, well, sure, mathematics, multiplication table, those are objective truths, but when you come to values and social concerns, we really can't talk like that. But we have to at least try. We need to find some common ground that we can agree on. And I think we ultimately find that the ultimate revelation of knowledge, of justified true belief, is in the Bible. But as a nation, I just finished a manuscript on critical race theory I sent off to Regnery. And I spent a lot of time on our founding documents. And certainly, we could go to the Declaration of Independence, as did Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln and Martin Luther King, and say, here's a creed, here's an American creed, that all men are created equal, and God has given us certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and so on. I hope Americans can go to that and say that is a strong foundation of our national life. And it's not merely our national life. It's got a theological basis. You can't avoid it. God has given us, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. And at the time that was written, it wasn't fleshed out consistently in America because slavery still existed. But it's interesting that the abolitionists, or at least many of them, would appeal to the Declaration and even to the Constitution and say, we need to live true to our creed, you know, to the truth of the matter. And if you look at something like Martin Luther King's great speech in Washington, I think it was 1963, he appeals to the Declaration. And he says, we've come here to cash a check that the Declaration, and also he said the magnificent documents of the Declaration and the Constitution, he affirmed both, said, we're here to hold America true to its creed. And I agree entirely. So let's get rid of this idea that the truth about morality or truth about the political order is just a matter of power plays, sound bites, and imageering, so to speak, or just throwing around images. We need to try to get to the truth of the matter and find some common ground.
Okay. And on that, Dr. Grotius, you mentioned objective truth, and I'm not sure I understand what that is exactly.
Well, it means truth that is true independent of my feeling or thought or observation. So what you said, basic mathematics, those are objectively true. It's not a matter of subjective feeling.
So, okay.
An illustration I like to use is, if you have three people in a room, and let's say the room temperature is 70 degrees, that's the objective truth. But subjectively, one person could feel comfortable, one person could feel cold, and one person could feel hot. So the respective feelings in the 70-degree room are varied, right? But the objective truth is that it's 70 degrees.
Very interesting on that. And we've got about 4 minutes on this particular segment, and you were talking about truth. And I had been at an event, and it was a national, I think, talk show host or whatever. She had given this example on that, truth is the facts with context. And what she said is, we're all in this ballroom, and a couple has left, a man and a woman has left. And on the chair is a purse, and a man comes in and takes the purse and leaves. And the fact is, man comes in, takes purse, leaves from ballroom. But the actual context of this, one could think that he stole it. But the actual context was, they got to the car. She says, honey, I forgot my purse. He goes, I'll go back and get it. And so he goes back into the ballroom, picks up the purse. So man picks up a purse, leaves. But the real truth was the context of that. And I thought that was a very interesting example.
Well, it is, definitely, because you need to know the general facts of the matter in the situation. So the way you interpret that depends on other facts. And if you simply clicked a video of a man coming in and taking a purse and you say, man steals woman's purse, and then put it all over the internet, a lot of people, you know, the man will say is a noteworthy political figure, then you'd have a scandal and you'd have the image projected, distributed all over the place. But the larger framework is his wife forgot the purse. So one of the problems with discerning truth today is that so many things, images, words, are taken out of context, and then they are distributed all around the internet. They become, they go viral, and everybody thinks they know the truth of the matter, when in fact they don't. And gosh, the worst example of this I have ever seen, and I'm a student of media, culture, and philosophy of technology, was the George Floyd situation. Everybody was utterly outraged that this policeman suffocated an innocent black man. That was the first image that came out. And we find later, if we take the trouble to look into it, that the context was a lot more complicated than that. You know, and we don't have to go into all of that right now. I'm not justifying what happened, but the context was a lot more nuanced, and we've got to understand what happened, that George Floyd was saying, I can't breathe, before he was put in the compliance hold. So many things. So that is a great illustration. I think I will steal that from you.
Well, I stole it from this person, so I okay. think that works out just fine. And we're going to go to break, and certainly we're coming into Thanksgiving. There's so much to be grateful for. I wish each and every one of you a blessed Thanksgiving for sure. I'm talking with Dr. Douglas Grotius. The initial subject, which starts us on this, is his book that he had written, and that is Christianity That Counts. But before we go to break, I am blessed to get to work with a lot of different great partners, and one of those great partners is Kirsch Insurance Group. And Kirsch Insurance Group specializes in the Medicare arena, and the government says that you have a certain time frame, that's October 15th through December 7th, if you want to make changes for the next year. And Kirsch Insurance Group work with many of the carriers throughout here in Colorado, and they have software that they can put in your medications and determine what is the best plan for you. And December 7th is right around the corner. I'd recommend that you reach out to Marlon, Danielle, Naomi, the whole team over there. And it's complimentary. It doesn't cost you anything. So check that out at iKirsch. That's iKirsch.com. That's iKirsch.com. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation with Dr. Douglas Grotius.
With the federal government printing money, it looks like inflation is on the horizon. That is why you should lock in a low rate now on your mortgage. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group is here to help. Lauren works with a variety of lenders to assist you in finding the mortgage that is just right for you. Locking in a low rate now will save you thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait any longer. Call Lauren today at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And wish each and every one of you a very blessed Thanksgiving, whether or not you are getting together with family and friends or possibly having a very quiet Thanksgiving. Wish each of you a very blessed Thanksgiving. On the line with me is Dr. Douglas Grotheis. And he is really one of the premier Christian apologist, I would say, in America today. And he's a member of the Evangelical Theological Society, the Evangelical Philosophical Society, and the Society of Christian Philosophers. Dr. Grotheis, I just have to ask you, I've always kind of thought Christian and philosophers wasn't in the same sentence, but it is, isn't it?
Well, I hope so, because I have 3 degrees in philosophy, all from secular schools, but philosophy basically just means the love of wisdom. So Paul warns us in Colossians 2:8 about false and deceptive philosophies that are based merely on human wisdom. But you could even say that Jesus was a philosopher because he thought well. He had a coherent worldview. He knew how to argue his beliefs very adroitly. So certainly philosophers can be atheists, or they could be pantheists, or they could be Marxists, but philosophy at its best is really the art of critical thinking and trying to defend what you believe through reason and evidence. So I find that to be extremely helpful as I look at my Christian faith and scripture and so on. And actually, next term, I'll be teaching a class as an adjunct at Colorado Christian University, which is a intro to philosophy class. And I should have 20 or 30 undergrads being introduced to philosophy, and I am really jazzed about that.
Oh, I'm excited for them that they will be in your class. That is really, really terrific. And you said the love of wisdom, the search of wisdom, I would say. But let's talk in this particular segment about something that is front and center in the conversation in America right now, and that is critical race theory. You said that you've just completed a book. It's going to be coming out probably this summer. Fire in the Streets. Critical race theory. What is it? What's your thoughts on it?
Well, there's a lot of controversy over this, and some people say, well, there is no such thing as critical race theory, and all these conservatives are making it up. So they don't have to look at America's very checkered racial background with slavery, Jim Crow, redlining. Well, take it from me, critical race theory is a thing. It is a philosophy. I have a book on my shelf called Critical Race Theory, An Introduction. So, you know, there's at least one book about it, and there's more than one book about it. But essentially, it comes out of Marxism, but it's a cultural twist on Marxism. It doesn't merely talk about economic oppression and the ongoing class struggle between the owners of the means of production and the workers who are constantly oppressed and need to revolt. The categories it typically uses are racial categories. Those are the essential categories. It may also consider gender. But the idea is that societies are typically racist. The racism is a given. And so you have to understand how one race is oppressing the other race. And the idea in the U.S. is that you have what they call white supremacy and white privilege and so on. And this is a systemic feature. So the idea is that American society is systemically racist and that it has been racist from the beginning. So you have something that came out 2 years ago in the New York Times called the 1619 Project. I don't know if you've done a show on that. But the claim made in there is that when the first slaves came to the U.S. in 1619, that really formed the backbone and the framework for the whole country. So it's not 1776 that matters, really. That was just a fraud, supposedly, the Declaration. But it's the importing of slaves in 1619, and then They even make the claim that the War of Independence, the Revolutionary War, was fought in order to preserve slavery. So much for what the Declaration actually says. And there's no evidence for this. I write about this in my new book. But the problem, there are a lot of problems here. The essential problem is that it's a form of Marxism. And Marxism is a false, irrational, and dangerous worldview. It's a worldview of division and fomenting conflict between different groups of people. And now the conflict is more, in critical race theory, understood in terms of racial conflict. So you have the oppressors with white privilege, and then you have the oppressed, which is everybody else, basically, people of color. And America has a very mixed background about race, certainly with slavery, Jim Crow, lynchings, redlining, and there's still racism today. But what I want to dispute is that America was founded on racism. It wasn't, by any means. Now, the issue, as I said in the previous segment, is are we living true to our creed? And it took quite a bit of time to abolish slavery and to deal with Jim Crow laws and to try to bring more equality of opportunity and equal rights to everybody, red and yellow, black and white. But to say that America is basically rotten to the core and that it needs to be torn down, which is really the premise of a lot of the protests and riots in 2020, is, you know, to saw off the limb that we're sitting on. Because the whole proposition of America, I call it the American creed, is that all people are created equal. We live in a society of opportunity, and we also are a self-reforming society. The 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to the Constitution give every American rights, not just white Americans, but every American. So the issue, I think, is living true to the creed, the American creed, so to speak, not fundamentally transforming America, not spreading the wealth around through some kind of socialism, not burning it all down because the whole system is corrupt, but reforming on the basis of fundamental principles. And the principles of the United States were very much informed by biblical revelation. Where do you get the idea that all men are created equal? Now, the Declaration doesn't say we're made in the image and likeness of God, but that's the only basis for viewing all people as equal mm-hmm. before God, mm-hmm. you know, or equal before the law. Otherwise, we're very different. So you need a theological premise about the divine origin of humanity and divine inherent dignity to ground that. And we have that in the Declaration, and that gets worked out in the Constitution. I heard Rick Santorum years ago say that the Declaration is the why of America and the Constitution is the how of America. And I think that's really an apt way of putting it.
Well, that really is, Dr. Grotius. And I'm going to present this to you and to get your comment. I've thought that the American idea and Christianity match up so well because America talks about the freedom of the individual, that all men are created equal with these rights from God of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. So this individual, these individual rights. But also Christ went to the cross for each individual. So in my mind, those two things match up. But what would your thoughts be on that?
Oh, I think so, very definitely. The First Amendment gives us religious freedom, and it also forbids the Congress from establishing any religion. And that's part of the American genius, because religions have to compete for followers. There's a freedom, along with freedom of speech and freedom of the press and so on in the First Amendment. So religion is not coerced, and religion is not forbidden. So that appeals to the whole idea of the individual conscience, which is definitely a Christian idea, liberty of conscience. So we are not somehow required to hold any religious beliefs, but within the boundaries of the law, we can hold individual beliefs, freedom of conscience. We can organize to promote those beliefs within the framework of law. And may the best and truest religion gain the most followers. But we're not going to demand that, and we're not going to subsidize religion, but we're going to create a forum, so to speak, in which religions and non-religions can compete. And that's really part of the uniqueness of the American creed. And we've seen that Christianity was formative in the founding principles of our country. And of course, Christianity has been the most significant and most influential religion, all the while that it's not established, which is, I think, the way it should be.
Question, because the founders, what you're talking about, that Congress shall establish no religion. And in, so I'm thinking government should establish no religion. But in the secular society that we have now, it seems that there are religions, environmentalism or climate change, whereas this religion has been established, and Congress, government, is then is subsidizing this religion, putting forth public policy for that religion. Is that a stretch, or what do you think about that?
Yeah, I know what you're saying, and I've thought about that a lot over the years, because there was a Supreme Court ruling, I think it was 63, Torcaso versus Watkins, and there's a footnote in that ruling that talks about other religions like secular humanism. Very interesting. So that brings up the philosophical question of what is a religion? And most people, a lot of people think, well, a religion has to do with what is spiritual or a god or a supernatural, something like that. And that's probably a good academic definition of religion that would differentiate a religious viewpoint from a secular or atheistic viewpoint. But there are still, you might say, de facto religions. So the worldview, the philosophy of life that's taught in the public schools is naturalism. It's the belief that the world is understood in terms of matter and energy and space and time. And religion, in the supernatural sense, is really just a matter of private opinion, and there's no factual basis for any of it. And so we teach everything as if there were no God. Now, that's not neutral. You know, that's not being fair to all viewpoints. That's privileging one viewpoint, a naturalistic viewpoint. This is going to involve Darwinism, and in fact, it will now often involve critical race theory and so on. So that is the establishment of what you might call a de facto religion, and that's why I'm a very strong advocate of charter schools, which have more freedom in what is taught, and why I advocate school choice. Long ago, Milton Friedman was advocating that, and people like Thomas Sowell and other people do. So let's break up the monopoly of state education. And I think that schools should compete with other schools, and then parents can send their children in places that fit their worldview. So I was teaching a philosophy class at Metro State several years ago, and I gave a critique of naturalism. And I said, you know, if what I just said is true, the assumption of just about all of your textbooks and all of your classes is wrong. I just let that sink in a little bit, get them to think about that. And I didn't get fired, so I was glad for that.
That's amazing. And what was their reaction to that, Dr. Grotius?
Well, I think they thought about it. They reflected on it because I had some credibility. I wasn't just quoting the Bible. I was giving an argument for objective moral values. And I said, if there are objective moral values, they're not in the natural world. They have to do with how we ought to live and how we ought to comport ourselves. And you can't get that from science. There has to be a realm of values that's beyond the natural world. So I think people thought about it and they reflected on it. I just let them sit with it for a while, and then we went on with class. So I'm glad I've had those kind of opportunities over the years. You know, that goes back to your question about being a Christian philosopher, because the truth is on the side of Christianity, and we can use good rational arguments for showing the existence of God, objective moral values, reliability of the Bible, and so on.
And that is what Christian apologetics is really about, correct?
It is, exactly.
Okay. Well, let's go to break. I'm talking with Dr. Douglas Grotius about some of the books that he's written. We were unpacking critical race theory and how that all works out. We're going to go to break, and when we come back, we'll talk about a really important book that he has written, and that is Walking Through Twilight, A Wife's Illness, A Philosopher's Lament. Very powerful. So before we do that, though, Castlegate Knife and Tool is another great sponsor of The Kim Munson Show and America's Veteran Stories with Kim Munson. It is a family-owned business located right here in Sedalia, Colorado, and they are opening up a pop-up store in the Castle Rock Mercantile. And so during this holiday season, you've got a couple of different physical places where you can go and see inventory. Also, they've got a great website. That's castlegate.com, castlegate.com. So whether or not you are shopping for a chef or a sportsman or a collector, Castlegate Knife and Tool is the place for you. Again, that website's castlegate.com, castlegate.com. We'll be right back with Dr. Douglas Grotius.
Life is more than what we have in the bank. Mary Alpers and Steve Kruse with Three Points Financial understand that comprehensive financial planning is an important component for each individual to thrive and prosper. Three Points Financial provides tax, investment, and retirement planning so that you can achieve your financial independence. With so much public policy uncertainty, it is important to have the professionals at Three Points Financial working for you to navigate those uncharted waters. Check out ThreePointsFinancial.com to schedule your initial consultation to achieve your financial freedom. That's ThreePointsFinancial.com.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, KimMunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And for this Thanksgiving week, we always like to do exceptionally special shows. And today is one. We're talking with Dr. Douglas Grotius. He's a member of the Evangelical Theological Society, the Evangelical Philosophical Society, and the Society of Christian Philosophers. He is one of the foremost Christian apologists in the country. And he's written many books. The first segment that we talked with him, we talked about Christianity That Counts. Last segment, we began with a book that will be coming out in July, and that is Fire in the Streets, talking about critical race theory. But Dr. Grotius, one of your most recent books, Walking Through Twilight, A Wife's Illness, A Philosopher's Lament. As we're at Thanksgiving time, certainly it's a time to reflect with friends and family, but also there's times of reflection of those that have passed on. So talk to us a little bit about this book.
Yes, this book is about my late wife, Rebecca Merrill Grotius, who was a writer and editor and singer and poet, very talented woman. And it's about our journey through her dementia. We found out that Becky had dementia in 2014, a very rare form called primary progressive aphasia. I didn't even know what it was until we got the diagnosis. She had been in the hospital for several weeks for depression, and then it was found out that she had not only depression, but this terrible form of dementia. So I read an article about this in Christianity Today, and I got so many responses to it. And three different publishers asked me to write a book on it, and at first I really didn't want to, but then I thought I needed to, not really for myself, although it did, I guess, help me a little bit to put it into words, but to help other people who are struggling through various types of loss. And Becky passed away in July of 2018, and I am very happily remarried to Kathleen, and it's a wonderful new season of life. Ecclesiastes says there's a time to mourn and a time to dance, and it's more the time of dancing, although not maybe literally, since I'm too clumsy, but it's more of a happy time now. But the book is in the category of what's called a lament, and you find laments in Scripture. We've got a whole book called the Book of Lamentations by Jeremiah, and we find psalms of lament, like Psalm 39, 88, 90, and so on. And a lament is basically a cry of the heart before God over a distressing situation. And laments involve sadness, often uncertainty, sometimes anger, pleading. Sometimes the Psalms will say things like, "How long, O Lord? How long must we wait for redemption and restoration?" There are probably about 60 Psalms of lament out of the 150 Psalms, and they have different forms. Two of them, actually, Psalm 39 and Psalm 88, don't resolve into thanksgiving or praise. They leave it kind of open-ended, which I'm glad for, because when you're really suffering through a terrible loss, you can't always tie it all together, put a bow around it. It's an ongoing kind of suffering and struggle. So I basically talk about different dimensions of lament. I spent a whole chapter looking at Psalm 90, which is a very profound psalm of lament. It's the only psalm of Moses that we have in the Psalter. And so I try to look at the gritty, difficult aspects of life, life under the sun, as Ecclesiastes puts it, where we have some really terrible disappointments, and we don't understand in many ways what the purpose of this suffering is. But as a Christian philosopher and apologist, I believe that the Christian view of life is true and meaningful, and I have good basis for that. I've written about it. I have a big book called Christian Apologetics, 752 pages. Oof. And there's a second edition coming out in March, and that'll be about 1,000 pages. So I thought the first one was, too thin, just a comic book, so I wanted to strengthen it a little bit. So let me tell you one episode where Becky and I were going out to eat. This was when we could still go out and do some things. And she was lamenting her fate, and you have to realize this is a brilliant woman. She was a member of Mensa. She had written two books and edited an academic book, edited all my books, and made me a better thinker, better writer, better person. And I said, "I know, Becky, it's horrible, but one day we'll be in the new heavens and the new earth, and there'll be none of these problems." And she looked at me and said, "But Doug, is it really true?" Now, Becky had been a follower of Christ ever since she could remember, but dementia does horrible things to your spirit, to your brain. And I said, "Becky, do you remember that big apologetics book that you edited?" And she said, "Yes." And I said, "I assure you that Christianity is true. You read that, and we know that Christianity is true. So we've got to go through a lot of suffering, but the end will be good. The result will be good." And that encouraged her. But it was a struggle. It's a horrible thing to be a brilliant person and literally lose your mind. Terrible. But there's meaning in it, and there's hope. So it's a pretty raw book, but there's always hope, and there's lots of scripture, because so much of scripture relates to suffering and grief and difficulty, but always in the larger context of hope. And as Paul says, this hope does not disappoint us. A lot of our hopes disappoint us in things like politics, sports, relationships. So many hopes just never pan out. But the hope of the gospel does, because Christ did die, was raised, is seated at the right hand of the Father, and he will come again. And so we have hope in the midst of our struggles and suffering.
So, Doug, as you're speaking about this and Christian apologetics, I think that is another show just in that. But mm-hmm. in my walk of the Christian faith as a Christian, I come to the determination that Christ took on everything that we could ever feel. So, for example, he lost everything. They took his clothes. They took everything. He could understand from a physical standpoint, physical infirmities, because he was beaten and he was, the spirit was put into him. But I think one of the biggest things was losing someone that he loved. I cannot imagine what was going through his mind when he looked at Mary when he was on the cross. He knew that it was going to be okay, but that had to break his heart to see how she was suffering because she loved him so much. Your thoughts?
Well, that's a very good point. And Jesus suffered the ultimate desolation, really, when he said, my God, why have you forsaken me? Said that on the cross. Now, that's a prayer. He got that from Psalm 22. And ultimately, God did not forsake him because the Son perfectly obeyed the Father. And Hebrews tells us that for the joy set before him, he endured the shame and the scorn of the cross. But you're right that Jesus experienced the most profound, most intense suffering that could be imagined in every way, physically, relationally, spiritually. And he did that to atone for our sin. He did that not just as a martyr, but as a Savior and as Lord. And just as he had said, he rose again from the dead and commissioned his followers to take the gospel to the whole world. And they have. And we continue to do so. So we find in the death of Christ that death does not have the final word, because he was disarming the principalities and powers. He was canceling the debt of legal indebtedness we had to God. He did everything necessary, everything we need for being redeemed, being adopted as God's children, being justified. And Christianity is the ultimate realistic religion because it doesn't sugarcoat anything. Sin is terrible. Sin is an offense against God. Sin ruins us. Sin ruins relationships. And sin, if it's not atoned for, leads to punishment and hell. But there is hope, and that hope is through Jesus Christ. This hope does not disappoint us. So when I was there, when Becky died, I knew that her body stopped working. She stopped breathing. We couldn't hear a heartbeat, and she had died. But it wasn't just that her body stopped working. It was that she left, because to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. That's biblical promise. So on one level, you know, we talked about context earlier. One level, you could say, well, this human body is no longer breathing. There's no heartbeat. This person has died. That's it. But the larger framework is the truth of Scripture, the truth of reality, that we go to be with the Lord when we die, and eventually we'll be, if we're followers of Christ, we'll be resurrected into a new life, a new heavens and a new earth, directly with God and all the redeemed, and there will be no curse and no tears and so on. We see that Revelation 21 and 22. So when you put it in the ultimate context of what God has revealed to us, the objective truth, then you can say with Paul, death, where is your victory? You know, where is the sting? It still hurts, but that hurt is temporary because this hope does not disappoint us. Other hopes do disappoint us, but the hope of the gospel does not disappoint us.
Dr. Grotius, we've got about 3 minutes left, and yes, there is this hope. What is the message that you would send to our listeners as we're coming into Thanksgiving? We're in Thanksgiving week, our broadcast. With all this kind of oppression that we are seeing around COVID-19 and the reaction to that, what would be the message you want to give to our listeners?
Well, we can start with being thankful, certainly. We should be thankful and we should be humble just as creatures, that any good thing we have has been given to us by God from the Father of lights, in whom there's no shadow of turning. That's in James chapter 1. And God is the owner of the world, and he's made us in his image and given us all things to enjoy. But then as creatures who are fallen, who are sinful, we can be thankful that God did not leave us in our distressed condition, but the Word became flesh and dwelt among us full of grace and truth, and the Son has made the Father known. So I'm paraphrasing there from John chapter 1. And John also says that those who believed in him and received him, he gave the right to become children of God. So if we are followers of Christ, we have been born again of the Holy Spirit, we've reached out to Christ through faith, not by works, lest anyone boast, then we have so much to be grateful for, that we are justified, we are put right with God, we're adopted as God's children, we're part of the body of Christ, we're part of the living temple of Christ, we're united with Christ, and in all things, one way or the other, God works together for the good, because he has put the love of God into our hearts. So there's so much to be thankful for, and sometimes we're weighed down by our disappointments and relational breakdowns and fears and bad health, but ultimately we have so much to be grateful for. And it's even found in psychology. There's the last 20 years has been a lot of study of happiness, what makes people happy. And one of the key elements is gratitude. So people advise things like have a gratitude journal or spend some time every day just being thankful. Well, that's great, but you want to be thankful to someone. And the ultimate person that we thank is the Lord. So it's not just I'm happy about X, Y, and Z, but I am grateful to him for what he has given me. And moreover, what he will give all of his children, which is resurrected bodies, a new heavens, a new earth, direct communion with God and all the redeemed people. I mean, that's tremendous. And then as Americans, we can be really grateful for the American system and all the blessings America has had, not to lull us into complacency, but just give us a foundation of gratitude from which we can seek a better, a more perfect union.
Wow, that's great thoughts here as we're in Thanksgiving week. Dr. Douglas Grotius, thank you so much. This has been a great conversation.
Well, you're welcome. Happy to be here.
And our quote for today is, and I talked to Dr. Grotius about this, and this was also what is one of my father's favorite quotes. And it is John 14:16, where Jesus answered, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." And so, my friends, today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, you are not alone. God bless you, and God bless America.